Good morning. Good to be with you this morning. If you're visiting with us, we are glad you're here. I hope you will find today to be an encouraging day to be with us and to worship, and I hope you can come back again sometime. This morning we'll be in Genesis chapter 22. Now, normally, for the regulars, or for the visitors too, we normally have the text up on the screen. We will not today. So we're going to just look through the chapter together in Genesis 22. We'll jump over to the New Testament for a minute later, but most of the time we'll spend in Genesis 22. If you're unfamiliar with the Bible, it is the first book. I made it easy today. Genesis 22. It's page 87 in my Bible, probably somewhere near that in yours. Now, we have been studying about Abraham. We've actually been studying through the whole book of Genesis about the beginnings of things, and recently we've been talking about Abraham. And Abraham, if you will recall, was given this promise that he would have a great nation that comes from him. And he and his wife, as they got older, his wife Sarah, they started to wonder how this was going to happen, and they thought, we're getting too old to have kids here, and how's this going to work? They tried to take things in their own hands, find kids in a different way, and that was not what God had in mind, and God kept reassuring them, no, you're going to have a child. And eventually, I believe last week, if I remember right, we finally reached the point where they have this child. Abraham is 100, Sarah is 90. This doesn't happen a whole lot in our world nowadays. But they have this child, and they name the child Isaac, which in their language means laughter, because they feel like this is one of those things that either you just have to laugh because it's so unbelievable, or look at the amazing thing God has done, or maybe it's just kind of funny to think of a 100-year-old and a 90-year-old and their newborn. Now, I always, when I read stories about babies, take myself back to newborn days in our house, and I remember all the excitement that went around that and all the nerves that went around that and these new parents at age 190 having to deal with all of those things. Which brings us to the beginning of chapter 22. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah to offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I should tell you. What in the world? Now, if you are looking at this story, it's so hard to see this through new eyes if you're familiar with it. But imagine seeing this for the first time, or imagine for a moment, if you're Abraham and you're receiving this news that I've been telling you all along that there's going to be a great nation that comes from you, I've given you this child in your old age, and now I'm telling you that this child is to be sacrificed. Now, immediately in our land nowadays, this would be on social media, and everyone in the comments would be freaking out, and someone would call DHS and all of those things. We wouldn't know what to do with this story, and it's hard to put ourselves back in Abraham's day and time. Now, the interesting thing about Abraham's day and time is the way that other people in his day looked at gods. And I say gods because they had multiple gods. And from shortly after the point of creation and things go awry, and then again after the flood, it doesn't take very long when things go awry, people had these ideas of gods. There was a god for this and a god for that, and we look at it in Egyptian culture, is still kind of popular nowadays, a sun god and a moon god and a god of crops and a god of animals and a god of whatever there may be. It makes its way into the Americas and in South American culture, and I think sometimes even in our own country in different ways, although we don't call them gods, but we have a lot of things that we serve. And the way gods worked, and understand, I don't believe these to be real gods, these are just things that people created that they felt like had power over them and over different parts of their lives. The way it worked was people would farm the land, and they would come out and they would have just a horrid crop year, and nothing would be right. And they would say to themselves, and people would kind of make themselves into priests or the people who communicated with these gods, and they would say to themselves, we must not have done enough to appease the gods this year. So the god of the crop is upset with us. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to offer some of our crops to this god of the crops in hopes of appeasing him. Or maybe the animals are not what we thought they would be this year, so we're going to offer some of our animals to the god of the animals to appease him. And they would offer these things up to their gods, and then the next year's crop would roll around and the crop was better. And so they thought, it worked. I offered these things and I've appeased the crop god, or I've appeased the animal god, or the sun god, or the moon god, or the god of the rivers, or whatever it might be. And so it worked. Well, if I offer a little more or a little better this time, then next year the crop is going to be even better. And so they would continue to escalate the offering. And it would start with crops and things of that nature, and it would make its way toward animals and sacrifices. And eventually they reached the point in these cultures where they would offer their children. They would offer people to these gods because they would think, well, the things we're offering now apparently aren't working well enough because we're still not having good crops, we're still having difficult times, whatever it might be, so we're going to keep upping the offering to the point where they reached people. Now, I say all that to say this. The idea of sacrificing people in America in 2017 doesn't seem like an okay idea. And it seems like something we immediately recoil at, I hope. In their day and time, the fact that God comes to Abraham and says, I want you to offer your son, is something that he sees in the cultures all around him. And probably something before he left home might have seen in his own culture to some degree. As he chooses to follow the God, and others are following these other gods. So when he hears this burnt offering idea of his son, although it doesn't seem to jive with the idea that he's supposed to have a great nation that comes through this guy, this is what gods do. This is what gods demand. And so when Abraham hears this, it's shocking in a way, and at the same time, it might be that moment of, well, maybe this God is a lot like some of the other gods that we know around here. So he says to offer him as a sacrifice. So Abraham, in verse 2, rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Now, he rises early in the morning, is setting out with his son. I'm curious how the conversation with Sarah goes that morning. Is it we're just going on a journey? Is it we're going out to worship? Has he detailed the plan to her and she has allowed him to go off and do this? How difficult would that be to try to explain to your wife who has had this child at 90, thinking she could not have a child, and now this child that she loves is going to be gone? Now, I said a while ago that I'm always taken back to my kids when they were small, when all these things come up in Scripture. And I remember very vividly when David was a new guy and there was no Nathan yet, having to take David to the doctor for shots. And I was given the wondrous job of holding David down while the shots were administered. And I don't enjoy shots myself. I generally don't mind watching other people get them. That doesn't bother me at all. It's when it goes into me that it's a problem. But when it's my child, and he is looking at me with a look that I don't think he had given me to that point in time, of terror, and this is your fault, and I'm holding him down, and I watch that needle into his skin, and the scream that follows it, and I have like a tear rolling down my face. It's just this horrible, sad moment. And I, at that instant, because I'm ministry-minded and this is what we do, I'm thinking about sacrifice and things of that nature. And I think to myself, I just can't comprehend a story like this. Being a father and knowing this is what you're going to have to do. In this journey he takes, it's bad enough to have to do this, but God doesn't set it up where he's going to just go directly and do this. It is a journey to get there. The commentators say somewhere probably in the neighborhood of 45 miles as they're going along, and not 45 miles in their car up to Corvallis, 45 miles trudging along, getting to where they have to go to do the sacrifice. On the third day, so after journeying for a couple days, on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. And now I think, honestly, on the third day, the journey gets just that much longer. Because now you can see the finish line of it, but you also know what's supposed to take place at that finish line. He sees it from afar, and he says to the young men, in verse 5, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And I wonder, as these folks are taking the journey all along the way, how many of them have looked at what has been packed for the journey and thought, we're missing something here. We've got the wood, we've got the things we need to be able to do the sacrifice, but we're missing this sacrifice. And the assumption being, well, there should be some sort of animal here that we bring along, and this is going to be the way this is done. Abraham, in verse 6, took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. Not only is Isaac going along to be the sacrifice, he's also being the mule at this point and taking the materials along. He took in his hand the fire and the knife, most likely the flint to start the fire and the knife. So they went, both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, and I think of all those conversations with a kid we've had along the way, where sometimes you're the dad and you've done something and it's really cool and they're impressed by it, and other times you're the dad and they're just kind of annoyed with you. But this time, as he's just walking along with dad, and he says, "Father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" And even Isaac, the wheels were turning a little bit. And I don't know that he has completely imagined what is about to happen here, but he realizes something is missing. And they need something else to do this offering. And Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went, both of them, together. Now, there are a few interesting things I think about here. One, this idea that God will provide. I don't know, as Abraham says this, exactly what all is going through his mind. If there is a God is going to provide a way out of this, if there is, I'm just going to say what needs to be said to comfort my son as we go along. We find out in Hebrews that he had reasoned through that even if he didn't provide something, he could bring him back if necessary, but that he may not, and that Abraham was okay with that because he was going to follow God regardless. Now, Abraham says God will provide. And I think there is one piece of this whole thing that we need to remember this morning is that God will provide. Not always in the way we want, not always the thing we not want, not always as much as we want, but God knows more than we do exactly what we need and exactly what he needs for us to be able to do, and God will provide what is necessary for that. And so Abraham and Isaac trudge along together in faith that God will provide. So when they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there. Can't imagine this building goes incredibly quickly. This is going to be one of those projects that you know you have to finish, but you're not necessarily terribly excited about finishing it. He builds the altar, and he laid the wood in order, and then he bound his son. Oh, could you imagine what it would be like to bind your own child there and then to lay him on the altar? He laid him on the altar on top of the wood, and then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. All along the way, this is what he was ready to do for his God. But an angel of the Lord, verse 11, called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Now he knew. Now I think we are probably tested from time to time. And some of those tests we probably pass with flying colors. Other times we probably fail pretty hard. I don't think we're tested quite at this level. It's interesting to me that it seems that Abraham has proven himself a whole bunch of times before this. If you remember when we first meet Abraham, God tells him to go, but doesn't tell him where he's going. He says, "I just want you to get up, take your family, and move, and I will tell you when you get there." And we talked a little bit that morning about how difficult it would be to do that in faith, how hard it would be to explain that to your wife, how leaving everything you knew to a place that is foreign to you, these are the things that God is asking. What we find about Abraham is, the way the response is, he went. It's just what he did. And at so many turns in his life, Abraham does the thing God has asked. Now, occasionally Abraham gets off track. Occasionally Abraham tries to take things into his own hands. And I think he rationalizes through that it's part of God's plan that he is doing things the way he's doing them. But what we find with Abraham time and time again is this obedience and faith in God. And there is a part of me, if I find myself in the midst of this story, because I am not as good at faith as Abraham is, that would want to just look back at this point and say, this was just another test? Have I not proven myself yet to you, God? And I don't think we would do that vocally, maybe, but do we not live life in that way sometimes? God, have I not proven myself enough times that we can just get by all these, the suffering and the difficulties and move on to the good stuff? And it just doesn't always work that way, does it? Sometimes it is tough, the things that are put before us to do, and yet in it we have the opportunity to show our faith to those around us. So the angel tells him not to lay a hand on him. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked. And behold, behind him was a ram caught in the thicket by his thorns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt sacrifice instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." And we've talked before in the study of Genesis, and I think it's worth noting again, as significant things would happen in places, they would name the place for the thing that had happened. And this place is a reminder to Abraham and to his family that God provides. Sometimes I think we've missed out on something by not continuing to do this, to have places that are a place that reminds us that God provides. And I think we probably have these in our lives, we just don't call the same level of attention to it that we once did. I think of the town I moved from. For several years, we lived in a house right next to the church building. And it was the house that was only good enough for the youth minister. There was no way they would offer it to the preacher. It wasn't good enough for the preacher. And so as the youth minister, I took this house. It was right around 1,000 square feet. It was 100 years old. There was not a level surface in the entire house. You would walk in one room, boards would move in the next room. It was exciting all the time. The air conditioner would turn on, all the lights would dim for drama. I remember looking at that house and thinking, you could not convince me to buy that house today. Although in Eugene, it might be the only one I could afford. I look at that house, and it's funny. We decided, the church decided eventually that they needed a parking lot more than that house, and the house wasn't worth more than the parking lot. And so they found a guy who liked to move houses, and he moved that house a couple blocks down to a vacant lot, and he added a whole second floor to it, and the house is actually kind of nice now. And I would drive by that house and think, well, man, if they had done that, we might have stayed in it, first of all. But secondly, I would drive by it, and I would think about all the memories of that house. I would think about watching our kids when they were very small look out the window and play and put cars on the windowsill. I would think about all the stuff that happened there and how it was such a small house and so crowded in there and so many things were wrong with it. And then I would think, and God provided. God provided for us a place to live. Wasn't anything of me. The church was very kind to us, but they just used it because it was a good resource. But for us, it was God providing. I think we could look throughout our lives and see these moments where God provides. But for Abraham, this is a huge moment of God has provided for me and saved my child. And here we are. So he named the place God will provide, and it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. I believe God continues to provide. And the angel of the Lord, verse 15, called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord," because who else is God going to swear by? This is an oath that is by his own name. "By myself I have sworn, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you. And I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of the heaven, as sand that is on the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived at Beersheba. I am again remembering my covenant with you, Abraham, because you have been faithful. I've provided for you, and because of that, because you have obeyed, these things that I've told you about, they're all going to happen the way they did. Now, there's one other element of this story that is not in the story, which I think is just amazing. And I'm always amazed that we can read something in the book of Genesis, and it is so relevant to us today because God's story is so perfectly made. He asks of Abraham something that all of us would look at and say, who would dare ask such a thing? Who would do such a thing? Who would expect such a thing? And it is exactly the thing that he did for us. There's a sacrifice made for us, and God himself, like he did for Abraham, provided the lamb for that sacrifice. In John chapter 1, we find Jesus approaching John, who's preaching. And in verse 29, John the Apostle writes about John the Baptist, that the next day he saw Jesus coming toward him, and he said, "Behold the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world." And we sang about him just a few minutes ago before our communion time. God provides the lamb, and that lamb is his own son. This thing he asked of Abraham and then stopped him just short of doing is the thing he actually does for each of us. God provides. And this morning, if you leave with nothing else, and it's kind of an odd story, if you're visiting, we don't usually talk about child sacrifice during our worship time. If you leave with nothing else this morning, realize that this is not just a story about that. This is a story that begins to open our eyes to exactly what's going to happen thousands of years down the road when God's own Son comes and there is no other way, because he prays in the garden, if there's another way, let it happen. Take this cup. And God's plan is that he will be the sacrifice for us. And because of that sacrifice, we can be with him. And that is the good news that we have to share today. This morning, if you have not accepted his son as your savior, if you have not been buried with him in baptism and risen to walk in a new life, this is the day for that. This is the day to accept that sacrifice that has been made for you. This morning, if your life is like Abraham's from time to time, gone in directions that God would not have you to go, then this is the morning you can come back and be closer to him. This morning, if you just need help from your church family as we try to navigate this life together, there are things we can pray about in your life, something you need to confess. Any way we can help at all, please come while we stand and sing.